I'm delighted tonight to welcome Jean-Paul Vigier and Annie Vigier back to San Antonio. It's hard to believe it's been 9 years since the museum selected Jean-Paul to design the Stearns Center for Exhibitions, and almost 5 years since the center opened. And since 2008, it's been nothing but good. Jean-Paul is getting tired of all the praise that he's receiving, but the community, I think, loves this building, and the press has been so complimentary, and we've had visitors, as you know, from all over the nation and the world every year. And what is most interesting to me, and I was telling Jean-Paul this earlier, our museum colleagues, professionals from around the country, and the art writers who come to visit the museum uniformly say that they think it's one of the most successful museum additions they've ever seen, and I would not disagree. It has really transformed our exhibition program, as I think all of you have easily observed, with such wonderful, large, flexible space that I think what is great is how adaptable it is for our different exhibitions. And I think the two current exhibitions, Real Surreal from the Whitney Museum and the sculpture show, The Human Face and Form, are a great demonstration of how wonderfully flexible the space is for different kinds of art, and also the wonderful changes of natural light, a mix of artificial and natural light that we can achieve in this space. So it's just been, I think, a wonderful journey for us. Back at the time when we started design after Jean-Paul came on board, he gave us a choice of having a black box exhibition space, which a lot of museums have chosen as a path of least resistance, no natural light, or natural light, because he became fascinated with the light of South Texas the moment he set foot here. And it was a day much like today that we spent, I think, walking around down at the Southwest School, and this beautiful white light, and he said, "This is the kind of light I'd like to capture and bring into the museum." And I said, "That's a great idea. It's South Texas. How do we control it?" And he devised a wonderful, ingenious system for doing exactly that, that gives us really the best of both worlds, so that we can show such a diverse array of material with no natural light, with natural light cut back, with a screening shade, or with full natural light, as you can see in the exhibition, The Human Face and Form. So it's a really wonderful opportunity, especially right now, to see how that all works. But I wanted to say, initially, what first drew us to Jean-Paul was his sensitivity to sighting and to the landscape and putting the building in the landscape, adjoining or adjacent to an older or historic structure, as was the case here. And I think two of the projects, and I think Jean-Paul will be showing both of those tonight, two of the projects that most won us were the Museum and Visitors Center and the revision of the entire landscape for the Pont du Gard, the great Roman aqueduct near Nîmes, and his wonderful media center opposite the cathedral in Reims. Both of them really got us very excited about his work. So besides giving us great gallery space with wonderful light, I think the siding of the Stearns Center, which defers so nicely to the domestic scale of Mrs. McNay's house and blends with the landscape, while at the same time doubling the size of the museum, is really quite a feat, and it works so beautifully for us. Just to repeat a few facts, Jean-Paul Vigier is the son of a Toulouse architect. He received his architectural degree from the École Nationale des Beaux-Arts and his master's in city planning and urban design from Harvard University, where he was a Paul Sachs Fellow, and he is an honorary fellow of the AIA. I want to thank tonight the late Francis and Louis Wagner, who have endowed lectures at the McNay in perpetuity. And I want to thank also the University of Texas San Antonio School of Architecture, and I see John Murphy, Dean, up there. John, thank you. And for helping to support this lecture, and we're looking forward, I know Jean-Paul is, to meeting with students tomorrow at the school. And I want to acknowledge that Jane Stearns Lacy is here, one of the people for whom this building is named. Jane, it's wonderful to have you here. And Bill Lacy, It is nice to be here. Good. And Bill Lacey, without whom we would not have found Jean-Paul Vigue, is here, who guided our search. And over there, I saw Tom Pross come in, who did the wonderful job of heading our capital campaign and getting all the funds finally together to build and realize this great building. Tom, thank you for being here. It's really a reunion tonight of many of those who helped make this center possible, and we're glad that it's a reality. Please join me in welcoming Jean-Paul Vigue back to the McNay to speak on modernity and heritage, contextual or pastiche. Jean-Paul.
Thank you, Bill. Yes, I'm glad to be back here. And I've decided to have a discussion with you about this very important question of modernity and heritage. And I've picked up that themes because, you know, at the moment, 50% of the globe is urbanized. The population goes to cities and abandon the countryside. And in 2050, 70% of the planet will be urbanized. And that means that the existing cities are more and more under the pressure of new constructions. And as the land becomes seldom, and we don't want to use more land because it looks very spoiled for the planet, and it's a lot of energy which is spent uselessly. So we try to save the land, and we gather the people in more and more narrow spaces in the very center of cities. And this has for consequence directly that the existing city is under the pressure of new constructions. And of course, as you get closer to the center of cities, you find more and more beautiful buildings, preserved areas, listed buildings and sites, this type of thing. And the confrontation in between modern and between contemporary architecture and these buildings become more and more difficult to manage. And that's what I wanted to discuss this with you. Of course, I will come later, after these few introductory speeches on the question of the expansion of the museum, and particularly of this McNay expansion that I've designed a little bit 10 years ago, as Bill mentioned it. The pastiche. I don't want to criticize pastiche. I just mentioned pastiche as a form of art. Pastiche has always been there, and it's a way to copy or reproduce something that already existing in another way. And I've put this image of the Dresden Semper Oper because it's a very strange building. This building has been copied from the Thomas Cole famous series of painting, The Course of the Empire. And it was not existing. It has just been, you know, taken out of the paintings, and it had a very strange fate. Since that it has been bombed during the war, it has been demolished and rebuilt again under the form of the pastiche as it used to be before. So the pastiche is a way of approaching this question of the art in architecture, and I put this also on the. Upfront, this works by Ricardo Bofill, the Palazzo d'Abraxas. It's in France. It's in a new town. Because I would like you to consider that pastiche and postmodernism are not the same idea in architecture. So you could use traditional or elements of architecture, and of course architects have been doing that for a long time in the past, taking columns, taking ornaments, taking classical elements into modern architecture, and transforming these elements in using these elements into a new setting. This has given this type of architecture at a period of time. This was in the 70s. And I have been, this was the time I was a student. And of course, I was asking myself, Do I like that? Is it the way I want to go? I was looking at these buildings. I was Bofill at the time was a very famous man in France. He came from Barcelona, where he was famous. He came to France. He was supported by the French president of the Republic at the time, Giscard d'Estaing. And he has been commissioned for very important buildings. And the people were looking at these buildings, and as they were looking at some kind of official architecture. And as you know, the state architecture are always given a very bad example throughout the world. This is something you have to be very careful with. And suddenly, one of my masters came up front in France, Kevin Roche and John Dinkeloo, which I have a lot of admiration for, came and designed this building, which is just a few miles away from Versailles, the famous Louis XIV castle. And they brought up a new way to looking at this postmodern way of doing things. It's modern, but it's still postmodern. There is something classical in this shape that reminds the classical organization of the castle, symmetry, lakes, you know, ornament, circle, classical shapes, and it was wonderful. Although, then Bofill suddenly came to America, and the influence of America changed his production. This is the Rice University building in Houston, and he came also with a postmodernist attitude. And then something comes up front that cannot be qualified. It's something I don't know what to say about it. It's an architecture. It's one of the assistant, Bofill's assistant, Manolo Nunez, a very elegant and a very nice architecture that just designed this building, which is the Orthodox Cathedral. And you see behind the cathedral, you see the Eiffel Tower, is located in one of the most prestigious sites of Paris. And of course, this is the first step into this question that we mentioned earlier, the confrontation in between modern architecture and of course, heritage. Then other buildings came up front, like big statements. And of course, I have picked some of them to show you that I've looked at these buildings also with a lot of admiration for the forms and for the boldness of the shape, but a lot of interrogations about the function they were serving. This is the Santiago Calatrava Museum in Milwaukee, and a lot of buildings have come up after this one, and after, of course, the famous Frank Gehry Bilbao Museum in Spain, where I've seen that very strongly, the influence of this Bilbao Museum over the scene of in museum design as being extremely strong, and as usually, like for Le Corbusier theories, for instance, earlier, this architecture has been very exciting and has brought up something new in the museum design, but in the same time, it has started a movement of other designs that are not competing with the Bilbao Museum, are much less inspired than the Gehry's design, and being used although by the mayors, for instance, or the politicians of other cities, because they thought that this statement in architecture was going to bring fame to their city. And this was the case, I think, in Milwaukee. This has been the case in Denver, Colorado, where Libeskind designed this building, which is in addition to an existing one. This is the case in France for Confluence Museum, where Coupe-Memblau, this great Austrian architects, have designed this building, which is a museum for civilization. And the city of Lyon has hired Michel Côté, who used to be the director of the Museum of Civilization in Ottawa in Canada. And this guy has observed the development of this museum, and he has dismissed recently because he said, what can I do? I cannot install something inside this building. It's not appropriate for being a museum. It's an incredible design and shape, but I cannot do anything as far as a museum. We had the same attitude with this building, which is in Antwerpen, north of Belgium, where the mayor says, I want the Bilbao effect in this city. You see the setting in the background. You see it's a very normal, it's not a very exciting city. It's north of Belgium. And they had this building, which is a big statement. And it's completely out of scale of the city. It has a staircase that goes around the building, and the public are climbing the building in a circle around the shape, and the exhibition rooms are in the middle with no light at all. So it makes a very bad museum. It makes an incredible statement in the middle of the city, and it is sold by the mayor as the way to climb up the stairs and to see the city from the top. Then we come to serious matters, because as you see, in none of these trends, I found something that could lead me, when I started in the 70s and up to now, to find my way, to base my attitude compared to this very important issue of adding buildings to existing ones and finding my way into modernity. And the first I found, because I was a student at Harvard and we were talking about that, although it was not built at the time I was at Harvard, was the Fogg Museum by James Stirling. And James Stirling has been an incredible architect. He has been, inspiring my generation very much as an English. And he has been fighting the Prince of Wales, because the Prince of Wales is not very modern in architecture. And he designed this building, which is some kind of a breakthrough for me, because it's still postmodern, as you see, about the details, the fact that he used bricks and this stone design for the entrance gate, and the fact that you see the staircase that goes across the building to link the existing one that you see on the right picture. It's postmodern, but it's a step towards the true modernity. And finally, the modernity comes up with this series of incredible buildings in Texas, since most of them are located either in Fort Worth or in Dallas. And the first one, of course, was Philip Johnson. I was not surprised. The other one was the Kimball by Louis Kahn. And, of course, we knew more Louis Kahn in Europe than Philip Johnson, but Louis Kahn has designed this wonderful Kimball Art Museum, but he has added something more which has inspired me very much, is the use of light. This was the first time that an architect in a modern museum was thinking about the use of light in the relationship towards the work of art. And he has introduced by this very subtle interruption of the vault on top of the museum, where there is a line of light and an element which is underneath that diffuses the light, which is washing in a way the inside of the vault and distributing the light inside in a very equalized way of doing, and very nice way. Of course, this has inspired many architects, and among them Renzo Piano in the Menil, which has made a step further in this question of the lighting of the museum, and he designed so many buildings now that we have a lot of references when we think about it. But at the time, the Menil was an exception. It was so new in the picture of the museum, and then the Bayerler Foundation, of course, in Basel and others. And of course, this creates the picture. So you see the pastiche, wow. Big statements, wow. And then we come postmodernism, wow. And then we come to modernity, and we try to confront this attitude of modernism towards the heritage and the existing buildings. And as a French, you know, I have been very influenced by Le Corbusier, of course, work, positively and negatively, as many others. Positively because of the breakthrough that has been made in the architecture of the post-war architecture in the 50s, 45, in the 40s and the 50s, and these incredible buildings that have been produced at the time. And negatively because many other architects have captured this message by Le Corbusier in a wrong way, and I've used this message the way it shouldn't be used. And this question of the modernity, of course, is not to me acceptable if it is not relocated in the context. Modernity is acceptable as long as it becomes contextual. Well, and the first, example that I have found when I was preparing this small presentation to you was this building in Frankfurt that I saw for the first time more than 15 years or 20 years ago, I don't know, and this is something I've been very impressed by. This is the Museum of Decorative Arts in Frankfurt by Richard Meyer. And as you see, he's in this type of situation. You have this 18th century building, which is on the left picture, and he had to design a new building next to it, and he used something which is for me very precious. It's landscaping. He used the landscaping to join the two figures, and you see this incredible tree, which is just in between the two buildings, makes the link through 150 years difference in between the two buildings, and to assert the statement, Richard Meyer built a bridge in between the two buildings to show how much this link in between the two periods and the two architecture was important for him. And it has been a miracle because I don't know how they kept this tree. This tree has big roots all around, so it must have been a very big challenge to be able to keep on that tree through the works of the museum. And then we come to this. Richard Meyer, it was not that difficult because you see the building, it was a nice building. But there, you come to the Paul Rudolph architecture, which is a very strong statement. So how do you add something next to a building which is such a strong statement in architecture? This addition, designed by a studio lab architects, 2013, you see, put a very interesting answer to that question. And you see, finally, you see that, of course, each one has its own qualities and its own approach and architecture, but they go together, they talk to each other. And in fact, the new addition is supporting the Paul Rudolph's architecture in a way. It's not creating a new building. Same type of attitude in this very recent edition. I think it has happened a month ago or something like that. This the David Chipperfield St. Louis Art Museum edition. Well, he had the same attitude compared to the existing building, you see, with a very sober and a very, very elegant type of approach. And then I've put this image from an architect, which I have a lot of, you know, I think, admiration for. It's Tadao Ando, Japanese architect, for this very special building he has designed, which is the International Library of Children's Literature in Tokyo, where another issue comes up, which is, how do you reveal in creating a new edition, in putting up a new architecture, how do you reveal the old one? And you see, for instance, on the left picture, you see this very glazed, long gallery that is put in place in between these two concrete elements, very solid elements of architecture, where you see the modernity of the design. And on the right picture, by nighttime, you see that this modern and nice architecture disappears by through the effect of the lighting to reveal which is behind it. And what you see by nighttime is not modern design, but it is the existing building. And you see, I saw this gallery before I worked for the Macnay. And some tell me that there is a lot of links, similarities in between this Tadawando gallery in Tokyo and the gallery that I've designed for the Macnay here. That might be the case because this relationship with the light I had this in mind all along the way. Of course, I've continued with some examples to show you where I locate, in fact, the Morgan Library by piano in New York. And that sets the picture, I think. And we come to the Macnay. When I came to the grounds and to the site here, this is what I saw. Well, and I think that this picture, it's one of the first pictures I took in this summer of August when it was so hot when I came. And I was sitting next to this small lady, you know, like this, and looking at the building. And it was such a beautiful park, such a beautiful setting. And when you look at the site from the top, you see that. So you see the park, beautiful. You see the house, Mrs. Macnay house. And you see there's so many additions that had been put in place through time. You see, I've put them in blue in the different pictures, and they are chronologically drawn, you see. So you see these additions that finally have changed completely the original image that you see on the top there. And finally, the question has been asked for this competition. Look, designing a new wing, what do you do? And the answer, of course, is the statement of the red rectangle, because it was something very neat, and I think it should exist, like the example that we saw on the Chipperfield Museum and others. It should have been supporting the existing building without really creating a new one, and setting some kind of fluidity in between the two, the fluid, you know, transition and circulation in between the two buildings, and this gave this. And of course, most of time, once you talk, once you think, once you write, after you've write, everything starts with a drawing. And the drawing has the capacity of making choices in architecture. Once you have drawn something, you have picked up an idea, you have made a choice. And this drawing, which one of the first drawings I've shown and I've produced for the competition, you can read through the drawing most of the choices that are being selected and then put in place into the final design. The difference is about the fountain. You see the fountain is there, but it's in the wrong location. It has been built on the other side. You see the walls, this idea of partitioning the landscape to create some kind of special relationship in between the sculpture garden and the inside. You see also the presence of a gallery or something like this, which is a transition in between the exhibition space and the garden itself. And you see also, which is very important in this museum and that the public doesn't see, the loading docks and all the service areas that were not existing here and that are necessary, of course, to welcome the temporary exhibitions. And of course, for me, Dr. Kiego just talked about the light and in this museum. The question of the light has become very important to me. And my idea was to introduce lighting into the spaces, but of course, lighting is good and bad in the same time for work of arts, because the curator educated to protect and to save the work of art. So when you introduce the light into the exhibition space, you may hurt the work of art and you may damage it. So you have to be very careful with the way you use the light in the exhibition spaces. And so there you see a section that shows you the way it has been approached. You see here, in fact, it is a system. It's not a roof that we put have put on top of the space. It's a system. And you see this, you will see the scale of that. And it's a man standing fits in there, you see. And so there are four layers, 1, 2, 3, and 4 layers on top of each other. And each of those layers play a particular role in the light treatment. The first one, which is the one close to the outside, stops the direct light. Because as it has been recalled, the direct light in Texas is very strong and could be very damaging. So you need the light, but you don't need the strength of the light to a certain extent. So louvers have been put in place there to stop direct light. Second layer is this one. And this one was intended to play two roles. First of all, it was in charge of creating the enclosure of the space, close the space, protect it from the rain, protect it from the air, and create the enclosure. And it's made out of glass. This is glass. This is diffusion glass, and it has the function of diffusing, equalizing the light. Making the light equalized all over the space. So this is why it is sanded. The third layer is this one, and it's made of two very simple coats of curtains that are motorized and perforated with different ways so that you can adjust the quantity of light that you have on both sides of the curtains. And one of the curtains is capable to create the dark space underneath. It's completely opaque, which is used at the moment. You will see one of the space is completely using the capacity of one of the curtain and making the space underneath completely black. And the fourth one now, because when you have stopped the light, when you have diffused the light, and when you have adjusted the light, you have killed the light. And you know, one of these beauty of the light is the vibration. The light is beautiful because it's a phenomenon. The small particles that constitute the light are vibrating. And you feel that. You feel that vibration into the light. You feel, of course, the energy of the light through the vibration. And so this layer was designed with a series of pieces of glass glued together, and in between each piece of glass, a series of small elements, you see there, white, have been put in place in such a way that the light starts to vibrate again. And so the light that goes through that piece of light, top piece of glass, starts vibrating. And finally, you get this, and you see the scale of the system. You see a man standing there, and you see that this man could be standing just in between the which in fact is the ceiling that you see when you are into the exhibition space, the ceiling, the glass ceiling, and this space where you have the glass that is constituting the enclosure of the museum. And this has been used also not only to treat the light, but to treat the atmosphere of the museum. As you have noticed, you have no piping, you have no ducts into the museum space. You cannot see anything. And the air is going through that space. This space enclosed is used to diffuse the air into the museum and to allow the air to go across the exhibition space without you see it. And of course, it is designed also in such a way that you could ensure the maintenance of the system without being seen by the public, which is looking at the exhibitions underneath. So it was a system that Dr. Kiego wanted to test. So he said, well, we have to make sure that it works, which was, of course, the least thing he could ask me. And we decide to build, of course, this is not anymore on the site, we decide to build the one-to-one prototype at the one-to-one scale, which was a real portion of the museum. And you see the Dr. Kiego on top, upstairs. And so he's making sure that it will work. Yeah. So finally we got that, which is what we have at the moment, of course. And, of course, we had to ensure the transition in between the exhibition space and the garden. The gallery is playing that role. Here, of course, you see some of the things that I told you about the Kimball. You see that small line of light that comes into the space, the walls, the running garden, together with the gallery, and the night setting, where the like in Tokyo, you see the image reverse. And rapidly, I would like to, because this project is for me, as you understand, is something I locate in other projects of the same kind. Dr. Kiego mentioned the media center in Reims. I'm going to show you a few pictures about the Museum of Natural History in Toulouse, which is some problematic. I've put also some pictures about the Vörösmarty, the Budapest project, since you can, of course, these projects, most of them are very controversial. Although here, in the Maquis, it has been very cool all over the place. But in Reims, for instance, I had the protesters, demonstrators. They were against the project. They were marching in the streets, says no to the project. No, we don't want this. Too modern. How can you dare creating such an architecture just across the cathedral? We had this. And had this in Toulouse, for instance. And also something I would like you to realize is that, well, some call that modesty, but sometimes it's not modesty, it's just reality. When you come to a place like this, you don't know what to do. People think that the architects, with the arrogance of the I have the idea. This morning under my shower, I found the idea. So this is stupid. This doesn't work like that. It works. It's a process, a very long process of, coming to the conviction that you think what it is good to do. And in Toulouse, for instance, when I came, they wanted to refurbish the existing museum and they wanted to add a new wing. And when I came to the city, this is what I saw. So what can you do with that? And this was beautiful. The church that you see, it's a Renaissance listed church, wonderful. You have behind one of the most famous theater in Europe, which was a theater which has changed the art of theater in the 50s with the Russian ballets and the Russian influence in Toulouse. And what you see is this. When you go inside, you see that. You see? Abandoned, it's a disaster. And when you look at the entrance of the museum, this is what you see. This is the door of the entrance. And the city asks you to transform that and to make out of this the most elegant and the most beautiful museum of natural history with as little money as possible. And so I usually... As you saw, for the Maquis with the red rectangle and the strong idea of the fluidity, and here you see this old medieval and 19th century mainly urban fabric, and immediately in the garden, which is in the middle, you see the answer. you see this line. And you see that this building has been founded by a line. But a line is not only a line. A line is also an idea. And in this museum, the idea was a discussion I had with the scientists of the museum, where they said, we would like this museum to take a special standpoint compared to the theory of evolution. And we would like the public to understand that the evolution is something that happens in between the human, the mineral, and the vegetal, and the interactions in between the different reigns create the evolution. And it is not a natural evolution that comes like that by chance. It's an evolution which is an interactions in between the different reigns. For instance, the dinosaur disappears when they have nothing to eat or where they get a meteorite on their head. The interactions of the range should be translated into the architecture. And here, this is the purpose of this curved line, to create this type of interaction and insight into the theory of evolution around a botanical garden. And this gives this type of drawing, where you see a botanical garden in the middle, and you see this line that unifies all the elements of architecture that you saw in the previous picture and seems impossible to deal with. And this has an influence into the plan. You see the plan of the church here. You see the plan of the theater. You see the cloister that used to be taken up by the museum. And you see the new wing. And finally, this makes one single building here, you know, as far as the design is concerned. And this was the result of the project. And the line, I told you, it's not only a line, it's an idea. The line is creating a thick facade, about three feet wide. Yes, wide. And inside the facade, you see here, you will see skeletons has been put in place, and the people, when they are inside the museum, they see through the facade, they see the skeletons that tell a story, and behind the skeleton, they see the botanical garden with the minerals and the vegetal, and they have a kind of superimposition of the vegetal, mineral, and animal, and they start asking to themselves, well, something that leads them to the question of the evolution through the interactions of the different reigns. You see, and it gives that. Well, the old facade that you saw is behind, huh? And it gives that. Because also the purpose of this work, the architects are to reveal the beauty of the existing architecture that was hidden behind plaster and cement. And finally, you look at this beautiful brick and the stones included in that and the arches that we were incapable to see before. And you see the relationship in between the glass that comes and then disappears to let the old architecture appear. So you have this inside. And again, you have this light that is washing the wall. Greenhouse in the end, and you see through the facade you see the small scenes. You see a man on a horse, and you see a bird that comes into an animal. You see another bird. You see a fish, and all these small scenes. You see them, and you have the mineral garden and the botanical garden just behind. And of course, also you find that some of the treasures of this place were forgotten. They have the most beautiful collection in Europe of birds, the Bezosel collection, you see. And of course, we have recreated an appropriate way of showing that collection of birds. And my friend, the elephant. which is built with a real piece of carpentry inside, like the carpentry in the roof. Yes, and I have been inside the elephant. It's wonderful. Same idea for the media center in Reims. You start with something that welcomes you, an angel smiling. It's a dream. You find this, which is the prestige of this cathedral, where the cathedral for coronation of kings. And you find this. What can you do with that? They wanted there the most beautiful media center in the east of France. You see, this is an old building here built by John Walter, the architect, he married Mrs. Guillaume, and they were creating the famous Walter Guillaume collection. He built this after the war. He had nothing to build. It took plaster, stone, handrails that he found, a very ugly roof there. Here, an old cafe, completely, disgusting place. And this was the setting proposed. And of course, you have this in front of you. And so the same attitude, a square that is going to found the new building, the media center, and also the idea of the fluidity of, again, in between the new design and the existing building, since I have decided to keep that building of Jean Walter, because the people in Reims told me, please, please, Mr. Architect, do not destroy this building. But I said, what can I do with it? He says, no, you do not understand. The city has been bombed. Most of the buildings have disappeared, and very few of them remain after the bombing. So please keep that. I says, okay. What can I do with the building? And of course, this gives the first sketches and the first drawings. And as previously, you find that the first drawings are founding the architecture. So you find here, you feel the idea of that this project is founded upon the reflection of the cathedral, which creates that dialogue again that links in between the existing monument and the new building. You find also the idea that the structure of the 21st century, of the 20th century, which is metal, very thin columns and beams, will talk with the structure of the cathedral, which is the first big Gothic cathedral ever built. It's a wonderful piece of structure. And you feel, of course, the same idea of going as far as possible in terms of structure. And when you start digging, this is what you do, see? It's difficult, huh? You make a hole, and you find a Merovingian ruin. You find a Roman oven. You find a well from the Roman times. You have the archaeologist that every week says, stop. What did you find there? And they come, an army. You can be photographed, stop the works. 1 week, 2 weeks, a month. And then says, okay, you can go again. And in fact, they use you for making findings. And you progress slowly. And in Reims, in winter, it's impossible. Because this area is beautiful for champagne. But in winter, there's fog. It's cold. Nobody in the streets. It's terrible. So when you have to build it, and finally, it starts. Yeah, and that's a piece of acknowledgement and joy, because you see the structure, the coin up, you see the metal that which is under against the cathedral, and you think of yourself as being a worker of the cathedral, you see. Well, and you get that in the end. This is light, class, reflection, lightness. And of course, you see that dialogue in between the cathedral, the blackness of the structure, lightness of the structure and columns and beams, and the use of the same stone that has been used for the cathedral for the basement of the media center. Of course, and this also, inside, sober, no sign, something very, very straightforward. And the only neighbor you want to see is the one which is across the street. And you see the cathedral through the glass. See? Oh. This is a million and a half visitors a year, I think it is. Well, and the people that were protesting against the project, one of the lady, Mrs. Eitzig, this is a famous brand of champagne, Mrs. Eitzig, so she was against the project very much. And she came to Paris, she came to the minister, says, no, do not sign the building permit of this project. And finally, when the project has been completed, we were together. She's a very nice lady, blonde, very nice lady. And we were just across the piazza, and we were looking at the building. And she told me, "Well, finally, it's not bad your building." Come to my place. I will buy you a glass of champagne. So we went to her place, which is just close to the cathedral, and she has a beautiful hotel particulier of the 18th century, you know, something very elegant. And so we went through the gate with a portal, wonderful, a yard, paved stairs, and the building behind, and the butler there with the plate and the glass of champagne. And so I was very, you know, impressed by this, and so I walked up the stairs, and I took the glass of champagne. I told her, "I don't understand. Finally, why have you been so aggressive?" I says, "You want to know why I have been aggressive? But look behind you." So I went, I did that, and behind this beautiful place, an enormous building, social housing, like a kind of bar, 14 stories high, 140 meters long. And see, you see what the architect did to me? Sometimes, huh? Well, I put this one because I told you that sometimes when you play that game, you step into political issues. And this is in Budapest. And as you know, Budapest, Hungary, has been occupied by the Russian during the communist period. And the Hungarian people, they were, you know, very resistant, reluctant to this occupation. And this occupation was symbolized by this building. Voros Majesty Piazza is the piazza, the main piazza of the city, where most of the most beautiful buildings of this city has been built. There is a famous Café Gerbault, where you have the best chocolate in East Europe, you know, and the best chocolate cake, which is just across the piazza there. And this building was standing there, and it was a shame for the guy. And he says, and when I came there, I says, "Okay, we want to get rid of that. We don't want that building anymore. Take this building out." And I came with I had a private client. ING was a Dutch bank, and fortunately this bank, the development department of that bank, was aided by a man, Paul Kaur, who just built the famous Ginger Eiffel Towers by Frank Gehry in Praga. You have seen likely this building. So this guy knew something about good architecture. And it's always important to have with you somebody that knows about architecture, because he's capable to set the pace and the level of what you do. And Paul told me, "Okay, we have to hit strong." And first of all, we are going to tear this building down. And when you tear the building down, this is what you get. So you get the back of the theater, which is on the other side, which looks over the Danube, beautiful river, just facing the famous, you know, castle
of Frederick and the famous Sissi Empress, you know. And you see that. And the developer says, no, don't worry. I know you're going to find something great for this building. I know. And he put an ad there with a pineapple, as you see, and where it's written, it's going to be juicy. He says. That's true. It's not a joke. And he says, it's okay. That's your turn. Do something there. So. You saw the picture in Toulouse, and you see there, it's devastating. Well, don't know what to do. And again, you start from the beginning, and you try to build an idea, to build something which is going to, you know, to hold over time. And there, because of this very elegant and very good architecture of Budapest, which is famous, you know, throughout the world, it's listed in the UNESCO World Heritage list. And so I decided to start with something that refers to this 19th century and beginning of the 20th century architecture of the city, and create an envelope and talk about enveloping the building into something which has to do with these decorative motifs that you find in Budapest. And of course, doing something which is elegant. And these people that I call on me, the Hungarian people, I have produced the first design, and they are very strange people. And once I have shown the first design to the city, most of them, because they have enormous egos in the city, they told me, no, we don't want you. You are not capable to do that. We are not sure we want a French architect to do that. This reminiscence of being told by somebody else what to do, and referring to the Russian occupation period, they were making a transfer upon me. And he says, no, we don't want you, finally, go away. And I had articles in the Budapest newspapers, says, Vigier, hands off. And so, when you are in this situation again, so you continue, of course, the project, and you try to. And I decided to do that. Just to build a prototype of this envelope, and at the scale 1:1, it was enormous, and it was three levels high. And to put this prototype right in the middle of the piazza, says to the people, okay, you ask me what I'm going to do. This is what I'm going to do. You can look at it. You can criticize, make comments about it. This is what I'm going to do. And we left that prototype for 6 months in the middle of the piazza, and the people were looking at it. And finally, like 1990, she says, oh, finally, it's not bad. Finally, it could be a solution. And we start building the project, and this is what we got. So in this building now is one of the most popular in the city. It has been an enormous success in terms of real estate. We have shops for the two first level. Then we have offices on three upper levels where are located the Art Foundation of Budapest, and houses on the roof. And you see again, like in the other projects, you see that relationship in between the light, using the light to reverse in one way or another one the view from the outside to the inside. And you see the houses on the roof are very nice. They are overlooking the Danube, the river. This one, again, it's almost the last one. Don't worry, we still have one, and that will be finished. I have hesitated a lot to put this project in my presentation. And I did it only because you are my friends. And because you will see something difficult for me. Because this project, I've designed a project always under the same conditions that you have noticed before. But I've come to a solution, and I have again been attacked by a person that wanted to be the mayor of the city. This is in Rouen, the famous cathedral of Rouen. And this is where Joan of Arc, you know, has been in jail, and this is where the famous Tour de Beurre, this tower, has been used in the Chicago Tribune, you know, the building in Chicago for the newspaper. So it's a very famous cathedral. And the building is just across the cathedral. And I have designed the building. I've come to something satisfactory after several hesitations and several solutions, alternatives that I have produced. And I thought this was the right proposal. And this lady, and I was supported by the mayor, and this lady told me, no, we don't want your building. We're going to sue you. We're going to do anything we can to prevent you from building that. And they went to court. One trial, I won. Another trial, I won. Another trial, I won. And since that time, the election came. And she wanted to be elected as a mayor. And she told the population, listen, if I am elected, we will not build this building. It is a part of my program. If you elect me as a mayor, I tell you, we will not build that building. And so finally, after having used all the ways, you know, in court, I won all the trials, and she has been elected as a mayor. So you see the story, it's strange. So this was the building that we used to be there before. This has been replaced by that one, which was a so-called convention center, which has been closed down by the governor of the department because it was unsafe. So it remained almost 20 years closed down, you know, filthy, absolutely abandoned, right across the cathedral. You see the cathedral on the right side. And so they've decided to sell the building, to demolish it, and to rebuild a new building, and that was my project. So I started, as usually, you see, you recognize the same way of doing things, context and strengths of the proposal and the drawing. And so I started by proposing this, presenting this project to the population and the city hall, hundreds of people coming, discussing, controversy. Says, no, we don't want this. Of course, I proposed this. Says, no, we don't want that. And then I resume the work, and I say, okay, I have to propose something else, stronger, more innovative, more personal, as a statement of architecture, although same idea of context. I propose this with a glass building, very subtle in terms of, design, glass, openings, compared to the cathedral again, and I came to that solution. And that's the solution the mayor didn't want. And so we were face to face, and so she told me, "We won together. You have won the trials, and I have won the. I am the mayor of the city, and I can tell you that the population of Rouen doesn't want your project. So what do you decide? Because you have the right to build it." So I said, "Don't know. You cannot build something against the population of the entire city. What can you do?" So you cannot be right against everybody else. So I says, I have to think about it. And I went away for a year, about, without doing nothing. And the people from the Ministry of Culture, because in France, there is always the Ministry of Culture somewhere else. So the Ministry of Culture came to me and says, no, you cannot do that. You see, you have produced before several alternatives, several solutions. So why do you think that this is the last one? He says, because this is the last one. You know? When you came at the end of the process of designing, conceptualizing something, you come to a point where you have a conviction about what you do. He says, no, but you have a conviction, but I'm sure you're capable to do something else. And everybody was telling me that. So for 6 months, I had the culture, the minister, everybody coming and says, Jean-Paul, do something. And I did something. Of course, I knew what they wanted. And Murcutt told it in a famous Pritzker ceremony, once you step into the compromise in architecture, you get lost. And I'm not saying I stepped into the compromise, but I did something which was not, I think, absolutely according to my convictions. That's why I tell you as a friend, because I don't want you to repeat that. keep it for you. And I've designed this. You know, this. And of course, we found in the middle of the ruins of the old convention center, we found that, which was a Renaissance facade, beautiful, that I have, you know, enhanced by a black setting into the metal. And of course, I did my job. I've been as good as I could, you know, good architect, trying to find ways, you know, things, designing appropriately, using the good stone, finding the good stone, the good metal, good colors. You know, this, the passage in between, and that, and this, and that. Okay? And the mayor told me, oh, how wonderful it is. Oh, how could you all? Well, do not repeat that, though. Okay. And of course, some of the features that you saw previously, here again, you know, this relationship in between the cathedral and there. So you see, I've introduced that into my presentation to show you how difficult it is. This exercise is not guaranteed that you could succeed 100% all the time. There is sometimes, you know, a margin of error. And if you are ready to face that margin of error, you could be in this type of situation. Well, and the last one, just a few images, because this is very dear to me. Because the first time all the board of trustees that from the museum here came to me in Paris, and they told me, we want to see some of the projects that you have built in France and elsewhere. We went to the Pont de Gare, and we looked at this project, and I think that this project has been an important element in the decision of the board to hire me in the end. And so I wanted to show you a little bit of this, and you will recognize some of the features that you saw in the previous projects. You see the starting point, where the elegance, you know, the fact that this monument is famous throughout the world, finally, has been devastated by the usage of the site, you know, campings. The famous Pont de Gare, in fact, was used as a camping and illegal constructions all around it. And it had been taken over by all the mayors of the different villages around, you know, to make money out of it in a very vulgar, you know, way of doing things, and it starts by a sketch of Azophon, where the sketch says that the site should recover its prestige, its purity, as it used to be when the Roman built the aqueduct, and the strength of the confrontation of this monument to the site should be restored. This project has been taken by the Museum of Architecture in Paris, Palais de Chaillot, and it is exhibited right now, presently at the museum. And the different drawings that I have produced at the time and sketches are going to be taken by the museum into the permanent collection for architecture. So I'm very proud of that because I saw that it's an acknowledgement for me of the efforts I've made for achieving this project. You will recognize some of the ambience that has been created after the project and the site has been, you know, refurbished and taken back to the original condition. And of course, I had to build a museum for archaeology and for the collections and to explain to the public what was the role of water and this aqueduct in the Roman civilization. And I've built this piece of stone, this museum, which is included into the site, and which I got the permission from the World Heritage and from the Ministry of Culture from France to do that, under the condition that there is no co-visibility in between the building and the monument. So when you walk through the building, you do not see the monument, and when you walk the monument, you do not see the museum entrance. And finally, to come back to the United States, I put this image, which is the work of James Turrell, the famous artist, that has put this light, wonderful lighting of the Pont du Gard. You see, it was an incredible piece of art he did. And this has been taken away by the 5 years ago flooding. Of course, James Turrell didn't want to redo it. So we just have the reminiscence of this, which is the essential of architecture. Thank you very much.
Thank you. If you have any questions, I'm ready to take questions. Or if you have to have a drink, or you know.
Because I've been.